consecrate my office, my energies, and all the wisdom I can summon to the cause of peace among nations.
Now those who seek absolute power, even though they seek it to do what they regard as good, are simply demanding the right to enforce their own version of heaven on earth.
I want to thank Secretary Powell for his careful and powerful presentation of the facts.
A pack of lies. A pack of lies.
The United States government has, one way or another, ordered, authorized, permitted, tolerated, torture.
We're making tremendous progress, but there is much more to do to win the war on terrorism and defeat terrorism.
I have a dream. I have a dream.
The fact is, we do need better international governance to help spread the benefits of globalization, 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 globalization.
American world domination or paramountcy. Historically, the U.S. sought security, not domination.
Nothing's perfect in life, so you have an election that's not quite perfect.
Now was the time to come forward and say who specifically was on that energy task force and lift any kind of shadow that's still there.
We've been through this issue a number of times.
We need to make sure that the political, the economic, and the security infrastructure of that state is shaped and helped to come into being.
Weapons of mass destruction.
Well, down there in Washington earlier today, Dick Cheney had another scare. They hospitalized him because of shortness of breath. He's okay, and he was just winded from torturing a detainee. That's it. And then later today, the Justice Department was evacuated because of a suspicious package. Well, that turned out to be just a bag of cash dropped off by Jack Abramoff. So that's fine, too.
From lavish parties to the golf course, more than $2 billion is spent annually on lobbying, almost twice as much as what's handed out in campaign contributions.
When you've got a huge amounts of money rolling in and lobbyists writing bill after bill, the American public deserves to know where this legislation came from and who it's going to affect.
Is it your hope, is it your belief that this investigation will result in a cleaner, more principled democratic process, at least as on Capitol Hill?
In the short term, but as John McCain pointed out, ethics in Washington's like a water balloon. You squeeze it on one end to cut off one series of corruption, it pops out at the other end.
They said that that surveillance could not include Americans. The executive order said it could not include any surveillance of Americans, and that's how the executive order proceeded. What's different about certainly the senator the approach that Senator Cornyn was suggesting was appropriate is that there was inherent authority in the presidency, in Article 2 of the Constitution, that is simply beyond what Congress needed to give in any law. And that's certainly what Vice President Cheney has been saying all along. And that's really, I think, the conflict that's at the heart of this controversy.
The president said that wiretapping domestic phone calls is necessary to fight terrorists.
You're right, Craig, and it doesn't make sense. It's like, even if the government heard an Al-Qaeda phone call, how would they understand a word of it? You know, it'd sound like Uday, Kusay, Pusay.
Hey, Tim! What? The reports state that President Bush has ordered the wiretapping to be handled by the NSA.
Yeah, that's right, Craig. You know, there's no telling how many Americans are being spied on by these nosy astronauts.
The executive power, I mean, I think the Democrats may be looking for trouble on this issue because, you know, it is an issue where a lot of Americans think, you know, we're spying on Al-Qaeda, good. And the more the better. And I think defining the issue as civil liberties not protecting us from Al-Qaeda, that's a difficult challenge for the Democrats, and it'll be interesting to see how they try to do that.
So they're appointing new judges more sympathetic to their executive power claims. We need to know whether you're one of those judges. In the year 2000, in a speech soon after the election, you referred to the unitary executive theory as the gospel and affirmed your belief in it. So Judge Alito, the president, is saying he can ignore the ban on torture passed by Congress, that the courts cannot review his conduct. In light of your lengthy record on the issues of executive power, deferring to the conduct of law enforcement officials even when they're engaged in conduct that your judicial colleagues condemn, Judge Chertoff, Judge Rendell, subscribing to the theory of unitary executive, which gives the president complete power over the independent agencies that protect our health and safety, believing that the true independent special prosecutors who investigate executive wrongdoing are unconstitutional, referring to the supremacy of the elected branches over the judicial branch, and arguing that the court should give equal weight to a president's view about the meaning of the laws Congress has passed, why should we believe that you'll act as an independent check on the president when he claims the power to ignore the laws passed by Congress? Congress passes laws, but this president says that he has the sole power to decide whether or not he has to obey those laws. Is that proper? I don't think so. But we need justices who can examine this issue objectively, independently, and fairly. And that's what our founders intended and what the American people deserve. So, Judge, we must know whether you can be a justice who understands how to strike that proper balance between protecting our liberties and protecting our security, a justice who will check even the President of the United States when he's gone too far. Chief Justice Marshall was that kind of justice when he told President Jefferson that he had exceeded his war-making powers under the Constitution. Justice Jackson was that kind of president when he told President Truman that he could not use the Korean War as an excuse to take over the nation's steel mills. Chief Justice Warren Burger was that kind of justice when he told President Nixon to turn over the White House tapes. And Justice O'Connor was that kind of justice when she told President Bush that a state of war is not a blank check for the president when it comes to the rights of the nation's citizens. So I have serious doubts that you'd be that kind of justice. Your record shows time and again that you have been overly deferential to executive power, whether exercised by the president, the attorney general, or law enforcement officials. And your record shows that even over the strong objections of other federal judges, you bend over backwards to find even the most aggressive exercise of executive power reasonable. But perhaps most disturbing is the almost total disregard in your record for the impact of these abuses of powers on the rights and liberties of individual citizens. And so, Judge Alito, we need to know whether the average citizen can get a fair shake from you when the government is a party, and whether you will stand up to a president, any president ignores the Constitution and uses arguments of national security to expand executive power at the expense of individual liberty, whether you will ever be able to conclude that the president has gone too far. Now, in 1985, in your job application to the Justice Department, you wrote, "I believe very strongly in the supremacy of the elected branches of government." Those are your words. Am I right?
They are, and that's a very inapt phrase.
Excuse me?
It's an inapt phrase, and I certainly didn't mean that literally at the time, and I wouldn't say that today. The branches of government are equal. They have different responsibilities, but they are all equal, and no branch is supreme to the other branches.
So you've changed your mind?
No, I haven't.
Now, I respect the U.S. Marshals. They have a tough job, and they do it with great professionalism. But in this case, the Marshals entered the house with loaded guns. The family was unarmed, did not resist, but still the marshals pointed loaded guns at their heads, chests, and back. One marshal chambered a cartridge in his gun. Twice they pushed the wife into her chair. The trial judge held there was enough evidence in this case to have a jury review the facts, hear the testimony, and decide whether the marshals used too much force to evict these pharmas. But that didn't sit well with you, Judge Alito. You grabbed the case away from the jury. You wouldn't let them hear the testimony or make up their own mind about whether the marshals had gone too far. No, you simply substituted your judgment for the jury's and decided that the marshals' conduct was, as a matter of law, objectively reasonable. Judgment for the marshals, no jury of their peers for the farmers. Why, Judge Alito? Your colleagues on the Third Circuit, Judge Rendell, called the marshals' conduct Gestapo-like. Gestapo-like.
Oliver Thomas is the president of the New Orleans City Council. The day the Gretna police put a ban on pedestrians crossing the bridge, he says he was watching from his car.
Well, hold on a second now. I can't walk across the bridge? And that's the state's bridge. So who gave you the authority to stop that walk? It was nonviolent. There weren't people walking with shotguns and rifles. They had to walk through shotguns and rifles.
How do you feel about the way those people were treated?
It's not humane to intimidate women and children, old people, many who were on their last leg. If you could see the condition of people walking across a bridge, it was, you know, literally the only way you can walk is one step at a time, but it was one calculated step at a time.
The police chief and the mayor have said that the police officers felt they were facing an unruly crowd and they felt threatened.
They felt what?
Threatened.
They felt threatened by dehydrated, starved, tired people. Sounds like they need a new police force.
In late June, 2 months before Hurricane Katrina struck, Mayor A.J. Holloway went to the Biloxi City Council with a proposal that now makes him look as wise and accurate as the best of soothsayers.
We took insurance, a business interruption policy.
Business interruption insurance is actually quite common among some bigger companies along the Gulf Coast. Many of the casinos, for example, buy it to protect their cash flow in case a tropical storm or hurricane forces them to shut down for a few days, weeks, or months. And since Biloxi is so dependent on casino taxes, funding 35% of the city's operating budget, Holloway thought, why don't we get the same coverage for city government?
Nobody, myself or anybody else, have a dream we'd see a Katrina to this magnitude, though we knew that we was going to see a bad hurricane, not if, but when. So we decided to protect ourselves for 6 months' worth of revenue.
That $10 million policy cost the city $92,000. Holloway says the insurance company has already cut the city a check for $7.5 million and that the rest will be coming soon.
The Environmental Protection Agency is proposing to allow pesticide companies to test their products on humans. The proposal, backed by chemical companies, has drawn intense opposition. Environmental and public health groups, members of Congress, and thousands of Americans call such studies unscientific and unethical.
It's either right or wrong to dose pregnant women, newborn infants, or fetuses. It's either right or wrong to use information from those studies. Now, the Congress has said it is wrong under all circumstances, and this rule is just basically undermining what Congress has said.
But the pesticide industry says these tests can keep important products on the market. Jay Vroom, the president of Crop Life America, an industry group, says with EPA's approval, the companies will keep doing them.
All of this amounts to an important part of the overall evaluation of products that, you know, not only can help farmers grow more and better food, but that we can prevent disease and deal with lots and lots of public health challenges.
I got good news and bad news. The good news is this. No Japanese people are being sent to any camps. The bad news is that time you got hammered and drunk dialed your ex-girlfriend who's studying abroad and sang her that Wham song that was your song. Government's got that on tape. Last month, the New York Times revealed that President Bush authorized the National Security Agency to monitor the international telephone calls and emails of hundreds of Americans without obtaining warrants, presumably during one of the White House's Fourth Amendment-less Fridays. The day the story broke, Bush faced tough questioning from PBS correspondent and world's greatest grand anchor, Jim Lehrer.
First, the New York Times story this morning that says that you authorized secret wiretaps by the National Security Agency of thousands of Americans. Is that true?
Jim, we do not discuss ongoing intelligence operations to protect the country. And the reason why is that there's an enemy that lurks.
They're lurkers. This enemy is different, Jim. They're lurkers. Could be one right behind that plant behind me. They lurk. That's what they do. They're lurkers. It's like loitering, but mean.
But tonight's winner, the indescribable Rush Limbaugh. He has now defended the president, bypassing the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Courts to authorize those NSA wiretaps by explaining to his audience that it was one of those FISA court judges who wouldn't let the FBI examine the laptop of the so-called 21st hijacker, Zacharias Moussaoui, which perhaps might have allowed them to discover the 9/11 plot in summer 2001. Of course, in fact, the FBI never even went to court in that case. They never even asked a judge to let it read Moussaoui's computer. The FBI's own lawyers decided the Bureau did not have the right to examine the computer. A later investigation suggested the FBI lawyers were wrong, and if they'd only gone to one of the FISA judges, the judge would have granted access to Moussaoui's computer. But of course, that's not the kind of story Rush Limbaugh wants you to know, so he lied about it, told it backwards.
Where does George Soros have all his money? You know? You know where George Soros, the big left-wing loon who's financing all these smear sites, you know where his money is? Curacao. Curacao. They ought to hang this Soros guy. His money's in Curacao. Mr. Socialism. But not for him. Not for him. Oh, no. He got money in Curacao. Oh, it drives me nuts.
Only describe it as a violent death, but there was a report that Lieutenant General Bacelar killed himself on the patio of his room at a luxury hotel overlooking Port-au-Prince. His death comes at the worst possible time for the UN stabilization mission in Haiti. Morale among the 9,000 peacekeepers from three dozen countries is sinking daily as kidnappings and hit-and-run shootings mount in the capital. The UN mission is trying to create conditions that would allow Haitians to vote for a new government, but logistic and security problems are overwhelming. Bacelar's death will likely raise new questions about the United Nations effort here.
It was billed as an end-of-the-year news conference by the Secretary General, but any holiday cheer was soon shattered. At the start, morning, Kofi Annan offered advice to his eventual successor.
They need thick skin. Thick skin. They need a sense of humor.
Up until now, the Nobel Peace Prize winner had in public kept his cool, but he lost it when asked by a British reporter about a Mercedes bought by his son and then shipped with a diplomatic discount to Africa, a slice of the overall oil for food scandal.
The Volk report says that the Mercedes was bought in your name, so as the owner of the car, can you tell us what happened to it and where it is now? Now, my question is, it's true that we missed a lot of stories in the oil for food scandal, and the UN hasn't made it easy, and even your answer today on the Mercedes so far hasn't made it easy. Some of your own stories, your own version of events, don't really make sense. I'd like to ask you particularly...
I think you're being very cheeky here.
Well, let me... Hold on.
Listen, James Bond. You've been behaving like an overgrown schoolboy in this room for many, many months and years. You are an embarrassment to your colleagues and to your profession. Please stop misbehaving, and please, let's move on to a serious general.
There are inconsistencies.
Move on to serious generals. Go ahead, you go ahead.
A small boat loaded with explosives speeds through Halifax Harbor. It makes a quick turn and heads directly for the fleet. Within seconds, a warship and its crew become targets. Right now, there is no physical barrier stopping any boat from targeting the Navy's 22 major warships in Halifax and Esquimalt in B.C. That's about to change.
This is Admiral Roger.
Lieutenant Commander Scott Toffelmeyer monitors activity in front of the Navy dockyard using dozens of cameras. But he'll soon have a new tool, a $3.5 million floating fence that could be up to 2 meters high.
Provide security around our vessels and our critical infrastructure here in the base of Halifax.
Over the last year, the townspeople have painstakingly collected all of the television and audio footage that was taken of the tsunami and have compiled it onto a CD. The town attracts more pilgrims every year than any other sacred shrine in India, and many of them are keen to buy the CD.
The tsunami was a rare occurrence, something that nobody expected, and this CD, which presents a glimpse of destruction, is really a collector's thing. We bought it to see what people here went through.
Many people who've bought the CD see it as a tribute to the people who lived through the destruction and tragedy, which touched millions and left over 225,000 dead.
They made a decision to limit the investigation to the last few years prior to 9/11, from 96 forward. They intentionally decided not to go back to 1989 when they had these same guys on the radar of the FBI, not to look at the World Trade Center bombing in 93, and the reason being, I believe, to remove the culpability of the FBI's New York office in the Southern District, the offices of origin, from any culpability for not stopping Youssef in 93. If you take them out of the 9/11 plot, then effectively, then they're not liable for having not stopped him in 93.
A lot of stories have been circulating lately about Ibrahim Bahar al-Ulum, the Minister of Oil. After denouncing the government's massive hike in fuel prices 3 weeks ago, Bahar al-Ulum left the country because of what he described as a family emergency. His portfolio was handed over to Deputy Prime Minister Ahmed Chalabi, but Bahar al-Ulum has refused to be silenced, and today he could barely restrain himself.
Such a decision cannot help the country. The time to keep my mouth shut is gone. I hold my reservations on whether what the Prime Minister did might not be illegal.
The fuel price hikes were part of an arrangement with the International Monetary Fund to forgive 80% of Iraq's $120 billion debt.